not in this universe. The pattern took shape. Wealth. Gamu assumed a new role in his Mentat computations. Gamu had been gutted long ago by the Harkonnens, abandoned as a festering carcass which the Danians had restored. There was a time, though, when even Gamu's hopes were gone. Without hopes, there had not even been dreams. Climbing from that cesspool, the population had employed only the basest pragmatism. If it works, it is good. Well. In his first survey of Gamu, he had noted the numbers of banking houses. They were even marked, some of them, as Bene Gesserit safe. Gamu served as the fulcrum for manipulation of enormous wealth. The bank he had visited to study its use as an emergency contact came back fully into his Mentat awareness. He had realized at once that the place did not confine itself to purely planetary business. It was a banker's bank. Not just wealth, but wealth. A prime pattern development did not come into Teg's mind, but he had enough for a testing projection. Wealth not of this universe. People from the scattering. All of his Mentat sorting had taken only a few seconds. Having reached a testing point, Teg set himself loose of muscle and nerve, glanced once at Terraza, and strode across to the concealed entry. He noted that Terraza gave no sign of alarm at his movements. Whipping aside the hangings, Teg confronted a man almost as tall as himself. Military-style clothing with crossed spears at the collar tabs. The face was heavy, the jaws wide, green eyes. A look of surprised alertness. One hand poised above a pocket that bulged obviously with a weapon. Teg smiled at the man, let the hangings fall, and returned to Terraza. "We are being observed by people from the scattering," he said. Terraza relaxed. Teg's performance had been memorable. The hangings swished aside. The tall stranger entered and stopped about 2 paces from Teg. A glacial expression of anger gripped his features.
"I warned you not to tell him."
The voice was a grating baritone with an accent new to Teg. "And I warned you about the powers of this Mentat Bashar," Terraza said. A look of loathing flashed across her features. The man subsided, and a subtle look of fear came over his face.
"Honored Mater, I..." "Don't you dare call me that!"
Terraza's body tensed in a fighting posture that Teg had never before seen her display. The man inclined his head slightly.
"Dear lady, you do not control the situation here. I must remind you that my orders..."
Teg had heard enough.
"Through me, she does control here," he said. "Before coming here, I set certain protective measures in motion. This..."
He glanced around him and returned his attention to the intruder, whose face now bore a wary expression.
"Is not a no-ship. Two of our no-ship monitors have you in their sights at this moment." "You would not survive," the man barked.
Teg smiled amiably. "No one on this ship would survive." He clenched his jaw to key the nerve signal and activate the tiny pulse timer in his skull. It played its graphic signals against his visual centers.
"And you don't have much time in which to make a decision."
"Tell him how you knew to do this," Terraza said.
"The Mother Superior and I have our own private means of communication," Teg said. "But further than that, there was no need for her to warn me. Her summons was enough. The Mother Superior on a guild transport at a time like this? Impossible."
"Impasse," the man growled.
"Perhaps," Teg said. "But neither Guild nor Ix will risk a total and all-out attack by Bene Gesserit forces under the command of a leader trained by me.
I refer to the Bashar Burzmali. Your support has just dissolved and vanished."
"I told him nothing of this," Terraza said. "You have just witnessed the performance of a Mentat Bashar, which I doubt could be equaled in your universe. Think of that if you consider going against Burzmali, a man trained by this Mentat.
The intruder looked from Taraza to Teg, and back to Taraza.
This is the way out of our seeming impasse, Teg said. The Mother Superior Taraza and her entourage leave with me. You must decide immediately. Time is running out.
You're bluffing.
There was no force in the words. Teg faced Taraza and bowed. It has been a great honor to serve you, Reverend Mother Superior. I bid you farewell.
Perhaps death will not part us, Taraza said. It was the traditional farewell of a reverend mother to a sister equal.
Go!
The heavy-featured man dashed to the corridor hatchway and flung it open, revealing two Ixian guards, looks of surprise on their faces. His voice hoarse, the man ordered,
Take them to their lighter.
Still relaxed and calm, Teg said, Summon your people, Mother Superior. To the man standing at the hatchway, Teg said, You value your own skin too much to be a good soldier. None of my people would have made such an error.
There are true honored maters aboard this ship, the man grated. I am sworn to protect them.
Teg grimaced and turned to where Taraza was leading her people from the adjoining room. Two reverend mothers and four acolytes. Teg recognized one of the reverend mothers, Darwi Odred. He had seen her before only at a distance, but the oval face and lovely eyes were arresting, so like Lucilla.
Do we have time for introductions? Taraza asked.
Of course, Mother Superior. Teg nodded and grasped the hand of each woman as Taraza presented them. As they left, Teg turned to the uniformed stranger.
One must always observe the niceties, Teg said. Otherwise, we are less than human.
Not until they were on the lighter, Taraza seated beside him and her entourage nearby, did Teg ask the overriding question.
How did they take you?
The lighter was plunging planetward. The screen in front of Teg showed that the Ix-branded guild ship obeyed his command to remain in orbit until his party was safely behind its planetary defenses. Before Taraza could respond, Odred leaned across the aisle separating them and said,
I have countermanded the Bashar's orders to destroy that guild ship, Mother.
Teg swiveled his head sharply and glared at Odred.
But they took you captive and...
He scowled.
How did you know I...
Miles?
Taraza's voice conveyed overwhelming reproof. He grinned ruefully. Yes, she knew him almost as well as he knew himself. Better in some respects.
They did not just capture us, Miles, Taraza said. We allowed ourselves to be taken.
Ostensibly, I was escorting Dar to Rakis.
We left our no-ship at Junction and asked for the fastest guild transport. All of my council, including Burzmali, agreed that these intruders from the scattering would subvert the transport and take us to you, aiming to pick up all the pieces of the Gola project.
Teg was aghast. The risk.
We knew you would rescue us, Taraza said. Burzmali was standing by in case you failed.
That guild ship you've spared, Teg said, will summon assistance and attack our...
They will not attack Gamu, Taraza said. Too many diverse forces from the scattering are assembled on Gamu. They would not dare alienate so many.
I wish I were as certain of that as you appear to be, Teg said.
Be certain, Miles. Besides, there are other reasons for not destroying the guild ship. Ix and the guild have been caught taking sides. That's bad for business, and they need all of the business they can get. Unless they have more important customers offering greater profits.
Ah, Miles,
she spoke in a musing voice. What we latter-day Bene Gesserit really do is try to let matters achieve a calmer tone, a balance. You know this.
Teg found this true, but he locked on one phrase. latter day. The words conveyed a sense of summation at death. Before he could question this, Terraza continued, "We like to settle the most passionate situations off the battlefield. I must admit we have the tyrant to thank for that attitude. I don't suppose you've ever thought of yourself as a product of the tyrant's conditioning, Miles, but you are." Teg accepted this without comment. It was a factor in the entire spread of human society. No Mentat could avoid it as a datum. "That quality in you, Miles, drew us to you in the first place," Terraza said. "You can be damnably frustrating at times, but we wouldn't have you any other way." By subtle revelations in tone and manner, Teg realized that Terraza was not speaking solely for his benefit, but was also directing her words at her entourage. "Have you any idea, Miles, how maddening it is to hear you argue both sides of an issue with equal force? But your simpatico is a powerful weapon. How terrified some of our foes have been to find you confronting them where they had not the slightest suspicion you might appear." Teg allowed himself a tight smile. He glanced at the women seated across the aisle from them. Why was Terraza directing such words at this group? Darwi Odred appeared to be resting, head back, eyes closed. Several of the others were chatting among themselves. None of this was conclusive to Teg. Even Bene Gesserit acolytes would follow several trains of thought simultaneously. He returned his attention to Terraza. "You really feel things the way the enemy feels them," Terraza said. "That is what I mean. And of course, when you're in that mental frame, there is no enemy for you." "Yes, there is. Don't mistake my words, Miles. We have never doubted your loyalty. But it's uncanny how you make us see things we have no other way of seeing. There are times when you are our eyes." Darwi Odred, Teg saw, had opened her eyes and was looking at him. She was a lovely woman, something disturbing about her appearance. As with Lucilla, she reminded him of someone in his past. Before Teg could follow this thought, Terraza spoke. "Has the goal of this ability to balance between opposing forces?" she asked. "He could be a Mentat," Teg said. "He was a Mentat in one incarnation, Miles. Do you really want him awakened so young?" "It is necessary, Miles. Deadly necessary." The failure of Chum. Quite simple. They ignore the fact that larger commercial powers wait at the edges of their activities. Powers that could swallow them the way a slig swallows garbage. This is the true threat of the scattering. To them and to us all. Bene Gesserit Council Notes, Archives Number SXX90CH. Odred spared only part of her awareness to the conversation between Teg and Terraza. Their lighter was a small one, its passenger quarters cramped. It would use atmospherics to dampen its descent, she knew, and prepared herself for the buffeting. The pilot would be sparing of their suspensors on such a craft, saving energy. She used these moments as she used all such time now, to gird herself for the coming necessities. Time pressed. A special calendar drove her. She had looked at a calendar before leaving Chapter House, caught as often happened to her by the persistence of time and its language. Seconds, minutes, hours, days, weeks, months. Years. Standard years, to be precise. Persistence was an inadequate word for the phenomenon. Inviolability was more like it. Tradition. Never disturb tradition. She held the comparisons firmly in mind, the ancient flow of time imposed on planets that did not tick to the primitive human clock. A week was 7 days. Seven. How powerful that number remained. Mystical. It was enshrined in the Orange Catholic Bible. The Lord made a world in 6 days, and on the seventh day, he rested. Good for him, Odred thought. We all should rest after great labors. Odred turned her head slightly and looked across the aisle at Teg. He had no idea how many memories of him she possessed. She could mark how the years had treated that strong face. Teaching the Gola had drained his energies, she saw. That child in the Gamu Keep must be a sponge, absorbing anything and everything around him. Miles Teg, do you know how we use you? She wondered. It was a thought that weakened her, but she allowed it to persist in her awareness, almost with a feeling of defiance. How easy it would be to love that old man. Not as a mate, of course, but love, nonetheless. She could feel the bond tugging at her, and recognized it with the fine edge of her Bene Gesserit abilities. Love. Damnable love. Weakening love. Odred had felt this tugging with the first mate he had been sent to seduce. Curious sensation. Her years of Bene Gesserit conditioning had made her wary of it. None of her protectors had allowed her the luxury of that unquestioning warmth, and she had learned in time the reasons behind such isolating care. But there she was, sent by the breeding mistress, ordered to get that close to a single individual, to let him enter her. All of the clinical data lay there in her awareness, and she could read the sexual excitement in her partner, even as she allowed it in herself. She had, after all, been carefully prepared for this role by men the breeding mistresses selected, and conditioned with exquisite nicety for just such training. Odred sighed and looked away from Teg, closing her eyes in remembrance. Training males never let their emotions reflect a bonding abandonment to their students. It was a necessary flaw in the sexual education. That first seduction upon which she had been sent, she had been quite unprepared for the melting ecstasy of a simultaneous orgasm, a mutuality and sharing as old as humankind. Older. And with powers capable of overwhelming the reason. The look on her male companion's face, the sweet kiss, his total abandonment of all self-protective reserves, unguarded and supremely vulnerable. No training male had ever done that. Desperately, she grasped for the Bene Gesserit lessons. Through those lessons, she saw the essence of this man on his face, felt that essence in her deepest fibers. For just an instant, she permitted an equal response, experiencing a new height of ecstasy that none of her teachers had hinted might be attainable. For that instant, she understood what had happened to the Lady Jessica and the other Bene Gesserit failures. This feeling was love. Its power frightened her, as the breeding mistresses had known it would, and she fell back into the careful Bene Gesserit conditioning, allowing a mask of pleasure to take over the brief, natural expression on her face, employing calculated caresses where natural caresses would have been easier but less effective. The male responded as expected, stupidly. It helped to think of him as stupid. Her second seduction had been easier. She could still call up the features of that first one, though, doing it sometimes with a calloused sense of wonder. Sometimes his face came to her of itself, and for no reason she could identify immediately. With the other males she had been sent to breed, the memory markers were different. She had to hunt her past for the look of them. The sensory recordings of those experiences did not go as deep. Not so with that first one. Such was the dangerous power of love. And look at the troubles this hidden force had caused the Bene Gesserit over the millennia. The Lady Jessica and her love for her Duke had been only one example among countless others. Love clouded reason. It diverted the sisters from their duties. Love could be tolerated only where it caused no immediate and obvious disruptions, or where it served the larger purposes of the Bene Gesserit. Otherwise, it was to be avoided. Always, though, it remained an object of disquieting watchfulness. Odrade opened her eyes and glanced again at Teg and Terraza. The Mother Superior had taken up a new subject. How irritating Terraza's voice could be at times. Odrade closed her eyes and listened to the conversation, tied to those two voices by some link in her awareness that she could not avoid. Very few people realize how much of the infrastructure in a civilization is dependency infrastructure, Terraza said. We have made quite a study of this. Love is a dependency infrastructure, Odrade thought. Why had Terraza hit on this subject at this time? The Mother Superior seldom did anything without deep motives. Dependency infrastructure is a term that includes all things necessary for a human population to survive at existing or increased numbers, Terraza said. Melange? Teg asked. Of course, but most people look at the spice and say, how nice it is that we can have it, and it can give us so much longer lives than were enjoyed by our ancestors. Providing they can afford it. Teg's voice had a bite in it, Odrade noted. As long as no single power controls all of the market, most people have enough, Terraza said. I learned economics at my mother's knee, Teg said. Food, water, breathable air, living space not contaminated by poisons. There are many kinds of money, and the value changes according to the dependency. As she listened to him, Odrade almost nodded in agreement. His response was her own. Don't belabor the obvious, Terraza. Get to your point. I want you to remember your mother's teachings very clearly, Terraza said. How mild her voice was suddenly. Terraza's voice changed abruptly then, and she snapped, Hydraulic despotism! She does that shift of emphasis well, Odrade thought. Memory spewed up the data like a spigot suddenly opened full force. Hydraulic despotism. Central control of an essential energy, such as water, electricity, fuel, medicines, melange. Obey the central controlling power, or the energy is shut off and you die. Terraza was talking once more. There's another useful concept that I'm sure your mother taught you. The key log. Odrade was very curious now. Terraza was headed somewhere important with this conversation. Key log. A truly ancient concept from the days before suspensors, when lumbermen sent their fallen timber rushing down rivers to central mill sites. Sometimes the logs jammed up in the river, and an expert was brought in to find the one log, the key log, which would free the jam when removed. Teg, she knew, would have an intellectual understanding of the term, but she and Terraza could call up actual witnesses from other memories, see the explosion of broken bits of wood and water as a jam was released. The tyrant was a key log, Terraza said. He created the jam, and he released it. The lighter began trembling sharply as it took its first bite of Gamu's atmosphere. Odrade felt the tightness of her restraining harness for a few seconds. Then the craft's passage became steadier. Conversation stopped for this interval. Then Terraza continued. Beyond the so-called natural dependencies are some religions that have been created psychologically. Even physical necessities can have such an underground component. A fact the Missionaria Protectiva understands quite well, Teg said. Again Odrade heard that undercurrent of deep resentment in his voice. Terraza certainly must hear it too. What was she doing? She could weaken Teg. Ah, yes, Terraza said. Our Missionaria Protectiva. Humans have such a powerful need that their own belief structure be the true belief. If it gives you pleasure or a sense of security, and if it is incorporated into your belief structure, What a powerful dependency that creates. Again, Terraza fell silent while their lighter went through another atmospheric buffeting.
I wish you would use his suspensors, Terraza complained.
It saves fuel, Teg said. Less dependency. Terraza chuckled.
Oh, yes, Miles. You know the lesson well. I see your mother's hand in it. Damn the dam when the child strikes out in a dangerous direction.
You think of me as a child? He asked.
I think of you as someone who has just had his first direct encounter with the machinations of the so-called honored maters.
So that's it, Odraid thought. And with a feeling of shock, Odraid realized that Terraza was aiming her words at a broader target than just Teg. She's talking to me.
These honored maters, as they call themselves, Terraza said, have combined sexual ecstasy and worship. I doubt that they have even guessed at the dangers.
Odraid opened her eyes and looked across the aisle at the Mother Superior. Terraza's gaze was fixed intently on Teg, an unreadable expression except for the eyes, which burned with the necessity for him to understand.
Dangers, Terraza repeated. The great mass of humankind possesses an unmistakable unit identity. It can be one thing. It can act as a single organism.
So the tyrant said, Teg countered.
So the tyrant demonstrated. The group soul was his to manipulate.
There are times, Miles, when survival demands that we commune with the soul. Souls, you know, are always seeking outlet.
Hasn't communing with souls gone out of style in our time? Teg asked.
Odraid did not like the bantering tone in his voice, and noted that it aroused a matching anger in Terraza.
You think I talk about fashions in religion? Terraza demanded, her high-pitched voice incessantly harsh.
We both know religions can be created. I'm talking about these honored maters who ape some of our ways, but have none of our deeper awareness. They dare place themselves at the center of worship.
A thing the Bene Gesserit always avoids, he said. My mother said that worshippers and the worshipped are united by the faith.
And they can be divided.
Odraid saw Teg suddenly fall into mentat mode, an unfocused stare in his eyes, his features placid.
She saw now part of what Terraza was doing. The mentat rides Roman, one foot on each steed. Each foot is based on a different reality, as the pattern search hurtles him forward. He must ride different realities to a single goal.
Teg spoke in a mentat's musing, unaccented voice.
Divided forces will battle for supremacy.
Terraza gave a sigh of pleasure, almost sensual in its natural venting.
Dependency infrastructure, Terraza said. These women from the scattering would control dividing forces, all of those forces trying mightily to take the lead.
That military officer on the guild ship, when he spoke of his honored maters, spoke with both awe and hatred.
I'm sure you heard it in his voice, Miles. I know how well your mother taught you.
I heard. Teg was once more focused on Terraza, hanging on her every word, as was Odraid.
Dependencies, Terraza said. How simple they can be and how complex. Take, for example, tooth decay.
Tooth decay?
Teg was shocked off his mentat track, and Odraid, observing this, saw that his reaction was precisely what Terraza wanted. Terraza was playing her mentat bashar with a fine hand.
And I am supposed to see this and learn from it, Odraid thought.
Tooth decay, Terraza repeated. A simple implant at birth prevents this bane for most of humankind. Still, we must brush the teeth and otherwise care for them. It is so natural to us that we seldom think about it. The devices we use are assumed to be wholly ordinary parts of our environment. Yet the devices, the materials in them, the instructors in tooth care, and the Sook monitors all have their interlocked relationships. A Mentat does not need interdependencies explained to him, Teg said. There was still curiosity in his voice, but with a definite undertone of resentment. Quite, Terraza said. That is the natural environment of a Mentat's thinking process. Then why do you belabor this? Mentat, look at what you now know of these honored maters and tell me, what is their flaw? Teg spoke without hesitation. They can only survive if they continue to increase the dependency of those who support them. It's an addict's dead-end street.
Precisely.
And the danger? They could take much of humankind down with them. That was the tyrant's problem, Miles. I'm sure he knew it. Now pay attention to me with great care. And you too, Dar. Terraza looked across the aisle and met Odraid's gaze. Both of you listen to me. We of the Bene Gesserit are setting very powerful elements adrift in the human current. They may jam up. They are sure to cause damage, and we... Once more, the lighter entered a period of severe buffeting. Conversation was impossible while they clung to their seats and listened to the roaring, creaking around them. When this interruption eased, Terraza raised her voice. If we survive this damnable machine and get down to Gamu, you must go aside with Dar there, Miles. You have seen the Atreides manifesto. She will tell you about it and prepare you. That is all. Teg turned and looked at Odraid. Once more her features tugged at his memories, a remarkable likeness to Lucilla. But there was something else. He put this aside. The Atreides Manifesto? He had read it because it came to him from Terraza with instructions that he do so. Prepare me? For what? Odraid saw the questioning look on Teg's face. Now she understood Terraza's motive. The Mother Superior's orders took on a new meaning, as did words from the Manifesto itself. Just as the universe is created by the participation of consciousness, the prescient human carries that creative faculty to its ultimate extreme. This was the profoundly misunderstood power of the Atreides bastard, the power that he transmitted to his son, the tyrant. Odraid knew those words with an author's intimacy, but they came back to her now as though she had never before encountered them. Damn you, Tar, Odraid thought. What if you're wrong? At the quantum level, our universe can be seen as an indeterminate place, predictable in a statistical way only when you employ large enough numbers. Between that universe and a relatively predictable one, where the passage of a single planet can be timed to a picosecond, other forces come into play. For the in-between universe where we find our daily lives, that which you believe is a dominant force. Your beliefs order the unfolding of daily events. If enough of us believe, a new thing can be made to exist. Belief structure creates a filter through which chaos is sifted into order. Analysis of the Tyrant, the Terraza File, BG Archives. Teg's thoughts were in turmoil as he returned to Gamu from the guild ship. He stepped from the lighter at the black charred edge of the keep's private landing field and looked around him as though for the first time. Almost noon. So little time had passed, and so much had changed. To what extent would the Bene Gesserit go in imparting an essential lesson, he wondered. Terraza had dislodged him from his familiar Mentat processes. He felt that the whole incident on the guild ship had been staged just for him. He had been shaken from a predictable course. How strange Gamu appeared as he crossed the guarded strip to the entry pits. Tag had seen many planets, learned their ways, and how they printed themselves on their inhabitants. Some planets had a big yellow sun that sat in close and kept living things warm, evolving, growing. Some planets had little shimmer suns that hung far away in a dark sky, and their light touched very little. Variations existed within and even outside this range. Gamu was a yellow-green variation, with a day of 31.27 standard hours and a 2.6 SY. Teg had thought he knew Gamu. When the Harkonnens were forced to abandon it, colonists left behind by the scattering came from the Danian group, calling it by the Halleck name given to it in the Great Remapping. The colonists had been known as Caladians in those days, but millennia tended to shorten some labels. Teg paused at the entryway to the protective revetments that led from the field down beneath the keep. Terraza and her party lagged behind him. He saw Terraza was talking intently to Odraid. Atreides Manifesto, he thought. Even on Gamu, few admitted to either Harkonnen or Atreides ancestry, although the genotypes were visible here, especially the dominant Atreides. Those long, sharp noses, the high foreheads and sensual mouths. Often the pieces were scattered, the mouth on one face, those piercing eyes on another, and countless mixtures. Sometimes, though, one person carried it all, and then you saw the pride, that inner knowledge. I am one of them. Gamu's natives recognized it and gave it walkway room, but few labeled it. Underlying all of this was what the Harkonnens had left behind. Genetic lines tracing far away into the dawn times of Greek and Pathan and Mameluke. Shadows of ancient history that few outside of professional historians or those trained by the Bene Gesserit could even name. Terraza and her party caught up with Teg. He heard her say to Odraid, "You must tell Miles all of it." Very well, she would tell him, he thought. He turned and led the way past the inner guards to the long passage under the pillboxes into the keep proper. Damn the Bene Gesserit, he thought. What were they really doing here on Gamu? Plenty of Bene Gesserit signs could be seen on this planet. The back breeding to fix selected traits, and here and there a visible emphasis on seductive eyes for women. Teg returned a guard captain's salute without changing focus. Seductive eyes, yes. He had seen this soon after his arrival at the Gola's Keep, and especially during his first inspection tour of the planet. He had seen himself in many faces, too, and recalled the thing old Patrine had mentioned so many times. You have the Gamu look, Bashar. Seductive eyes. That guard captain back there had them. She and Odraid and Lucilla were alike in this. Few people paid much attention to the importance of eyes when it came to seduction, he thought. It took a Bene Gesserit upbringing to make that point. Big breasts in a woman and hard loins in a man, that tightly muscular look to the buttocks. These were naturally important in sexual matchings. But without the eyes, the rest of it could go for nothing. Eyes were essential. You could drown in the right kind of eyes, he had learned, sink right into them, and be unaware of what was being done to you until penis was firmly clasped in vagina. He had noted Lucilla's eyes immediately after his arrival on Gamu, and had walked cautiously. No doubts about how the sisterhood used her talents. There was Lucilla now, waiting at the central inspection and decontamination chamber. She gave him the flickering hand sign that all was well with the Gola. Teg relaxed and watched as Lucilla and Odraid confronted each other. The two women had remarkably similar features despite the age difference. Their bodies were quite different, though, Lucilla more solid against Odraid's willowy form. The guard captain of the Seductive Eyes came up beside Teg and leaned close to him. "Shuang Yu has just learned who you brought back with you," she said, nodding toward Terrasa. "Ah, there she is now." Shuang Yu stepped from a lift tube and crossed to Terrasa, giving only an angry glare to Teg. "Terrasa wanted to surprise you," he thought. "We all know why." "You don't appear happy to see me," Terrasa said, addressing Shuang Yu.
"I am surprised, Mother Superior," Shuang Yu said. "I had no idea."
She glanced once more at Teg, a look of venom in her eyes. Odraid and Lucilla broke off their mutual examination.
"I had heard about it, of course," Odraid said. "But it is a stopper to confront yourself in the face of another person."
"I warned you," Terrasa said.
"What are your orders, Mother Superior?" Shuang Yu asked.
It was as close as she could come to asking the purpose of Terrasa's visit.
"I would like a private word with Lucilla," Terrasa said.
"I'll have quarters prepared for you," Shuang Yu said.
"Don't bother," Terrasa said. "I'm not staying. Miles has already arranged for my transport. Duty requires my presence at Chapter House. Lucilla and I will talk outside in the courtyard."
Terrasa put a finger to her cheek.
"Oh, and I'd like to watch the Gola unobserved for a few minutes. I'm sure Lucilla can arrange it."
"He's taking the more intense training quite well," Lucilla said as the two moved off toward a lift tube. Teg turned his attention to Odraid, noting as his gaze passed across Shuang Yu's face the intensity of her anger. She was not trying to conceal it.
Was Lucilla a sister or a daughter of Odraid? Teg wondered.
It occurred to him suddenly that there must be a Bene Gesserit purpose behind the resemblance.
Yes, of course.
Lucilla was an imprinter. Shuang Yu overcame her anger. She looked with curiosity at Odraid.
"I was just about to take lunch, sister," Shuang Yu said. "Would you care to join me?"
"I must have a word alone with the Bashar," Odraid said.
"If it's all right, perhaps we could remain here for our talk. I must not be seen by the Gola." Shuang Yu scowled, not trying to hide her upset from Odraid. They knew a Chapter House where loyalties lay, but no one would remove her from this post of observational command. Opposition had its rights. Her thoughts were clear even to Teg. He noted the stiffness of Shuang Yu's back as she left them.
"It is bad when sister is turned against sister," Odraid said.
Teg gave a hand sign to his guard captain, ordering her to clear the area.
"Alone," Odraid said.
"Alone it would be." To Odraid he said,
"This is one of my areas. No spies or other means of observing us here."
"I thought as much," Odraid said.
"We have a service room over there," Teg nodded to his left. "Furniture, even chair dogs, if you prefer."
"I hate it when they try to cuddle me," she said. "Could we talk here?" She put a hand under Teg's arm. "Perhaps we could walk a bit. I got so stiff sitting in that lighter."
"What is it you're supposed to tell me?" he asked as they strolled.
"My memories are no longer selectively filtered," she said. "I have them all, only on the female side, naturally."
"So?"
Teg pursed his lips. This was not the overture he had expected. Odraid appeared more like one who would take off on a direct approach.
Terraza says you have read the Atreides Manifesto. Good. You know it will cause upset in many quarters. Shuang Yu already has made it the subject of a diatribe against you Atreides. Odraid stared at him solemnly. As the reports all said, Teg remained an imposing figure, but she had known that without the reports. We are both Atreides, you and I, Odraid said. Teg came to full alert. Your mother explained that to you in detail, Odraid said, when you took your first school leave back to Linnaeus. Teg stopped and stared down at her. How could she know this? To his knowledge, he had never before met and conversed with this remote Darwi Odraid. Was he the subject of special discussions at Chapter House? He held his silence, forcing her to carry the conversation. I will recount a conversation between a man and my birth mother, Odraid said. They are in bed, and the man says, I fathered a few children when I first escaped from the close bondage of the Bene Gesserit, back when I thought myself an independent agent, free to enlist and fight anywhere I chose. Teg did not try to conceal a surprise. Those were his own words. Mentat memory told him Odraid had them down as accurately as a mechanical recorder, even the tone. More, she asked, as he continued to stare at her. Very well. The man says, that was before they sent me to Mentat training, of course. What an eye-opener that was. I had never before been out of the Sisterhood sight for an instant. I was never a free agent. Not even when I spoke those words, Teg said. True. She urged him by pressure on his arm as they continued their stroll across the chamber. The children you fathered all belong to the Bene Gesserit. The Sisterhood takes no chances that our genotype will be sent into the wild gene pool. Let my body go to Shaitan. The precious genotype remains in Sisterhood care, he said. My care, Odraid said. I am one of your daughters. Again he forced her to stop. I think you know who my mother was, she said. She held up a hand for silence as he started to respond. Names are not necessary. Teg studied Odraid's features, seeing the recognizable signs there. Mother and daughter were matched. But what of Lucilla? As though she heard his question, Odraid said, Lucilla is from a parallel breeding line. Quite remarkable, isn't it? What careful breed-matching can achieve. Teg cleared his throat. He felt no emotional attachment to this newly revealed daughter. Her words and other important signals of her performance demanded his primary attention. This is no casual conversation, he said. Is this all of what you were to reveal to me? I thought the Mother Superior said... There is more, Odraid agreed. The Manifesto. I am its author. I wrote it at Terraza's orders and following her detailed instructions. Teg glanced around the large chamber as though to make sure no one overheard. He spoke in a lowered voice. The Tlilazu are spreading it far and wide, just as we hoped. Why are you telling me this? Terraza said you were to prepare me for... There will come a time when you must know our purpose. It is Terraza's wish that you make your decisions then, that you really become a free agent. Even as she spoke, Odraid saw the Mentat glaze in his eyes. Teg breathed deeply. Dependencies and key logs. He felt the Mentat sense of an enormous pattern just beyond the reach of his accumulated data. He did not even consider for an instant that some form of filial devotion had prompted these revelations. There was a fundamentalist, dogmatic, and ritualistic essence apparent in all Bene Gesserit training, despite every effort to prevent this. Odraid, this daughter out of his past,
was a full reverend mother with extraordinary powers of muscle and nerve control, full memories on the female side. She was one of the special ones. She knew tricks of violence that few humans ever suspected. Still, that similarity, that essence remained, and Amentat always saw it. What does she want? Affirmation of his paternity? She already had all of the confirmation she could need. Observing her now, the way she waited so patiently for his thoughts to resolve, Teg reflected that it often was said with truth that Reverend Mothers no longer were completely members of the human race. They moved somehow outside the main flow, perhaps parallel to it, perhaps diving into it occasionally for their own purposes, but always removed from humankind. They removed themselves. It was an identifying mark of the Reverend Mother, a sense of extra identity that made them closer to the long-dead tyrant than to the human stock from which they sprang. Manipulation. That was their mark. They manipulated everyone and everything. "I am to be the Bene Gesserit eyes," Teg said. "Terraza wants me to make a human decision for all of you." Obviously pleased, Odraid squeezed his arm. "What a father I have." "Do you really have a father?" he asked, and he recounted for her what he had been thinking about the Bene Gesserit removing themselves from humanity. "Outside humanity," she said. "What a curious idea. Are guild navigators also outside their original humanity?" He thought about this. Guild navigators diverged widely from humankind's more common shape. Born in space and living out their lives in tanks of melange gas, they distorted the original form, elongated and repositioned limbs and organs. But a young navigator in Estrus, and before entering the tank, could breed with the norm. It had been demonstrated. They became non-human, but not in the way of the Bene Gesserit. "Navigators are not your mental kin," he said. "They think human. Guiding a ship through space, even with prescience to find the safe way, as a pattern a human can accept." "You don't accept our pattern?" "As far as I can. But somewhere in your development, you shift outside the original pattern. I think you may perform a conscious act, even to appear human. This way you hold my arm right now, as though you really were my daughter."
"I am your daughter.
But I'm surprised you think so little of us."
"Quite the contrary. I stand in awe of you."
"Of your own daughter?"
"Of any reverend mother."
"You think I exist only to manipulate lesser creatures?"
"I think you no longer really feel human. There's a gap in you, something missing, something you've removed. You no longer are one of us."
"Thank you," Odraid said. "Terraza told me you would not hesitate to answer truthfully, but I knew that for myself."
"For what have you prepared me?"
"You will know it when it occurs, that is all I can say. All I am permitted to say."
Manipulating again, he thought. Damn them!
Odraid cleared her throat. She appeared about to say something more, but she remained silent as she guided Teg around and strolled with him back across the chamber. Even though she had known what Teg must say, his words pained her. She wanted to tell him that she was one of those who still felt human, but his judgment of the sisterhood could not be denied. "We are taught to reject love. We can simulate it, but each of us is capable of cutting it off in an instant." There were sounds behind them. They stopped and turned. Lucilla and Terraza emerged from a lift tube, speaking idly about their observations of the Gola.
"You are absolutely right to treat him as one of us," Terraza said.
Teg heard but made no comment as they awaited the approach of the two women. "He knows," Odraid thought. "He will not ask me about my birth mother.
There was no bonding, no real imprint. Yes, he knows.
Odrade closed her eyes, and memory startled her by producing of itself an image of a painting. The thing occupied a space on the wall of Terraza's morning room. Ixion artifice had preserved the painting in the finest hermetically sealed frame behind a cover of invisible plaza. Odrade often stopped in front of the painting, feeling each time that her hand might reach out and actually touch the ancient canvas so cunningly preserved by the Ixions. Cottages at Cordoval. The artist's name for his work and his own name were preserved on a burnished plate beneath the painting. Vincent van Gogh. The thing dated from a time so ancient that only rare remnants such as this painting remained to send a physical impression down the ages. She had tried to imagine the journeys that painting had taken, the serial chance that had brought it intact to Terraza's room. The Ixions had been at their best in the preservation and restoration. An observer could touch a dark spot on the lower left corner of the frame. Immediately you were engulfed in the true genius, not only of the artist, but of the Ixion who had restored and preserved the work. His name was there on the frame, Martin Burrow. When touched by the human finger, the dot became a sense projector, a benign spin-off of the technology that had produced the Ixion probe. Burrow had restored not only the painting, but the painter, Van Gogh's feeling accompaniment, to each brushstroke. All had been captured in the brushstrokes, recorded there by human movements. Odrade had stood there engrossed through the whole performance so many times, she felt she could recreate the painting independently. Recalling this experience so near to Teg's accusation, she knew at once why her memory had reproduced the image for her, why that painting still fascinated her. For the brief space of that replay, she always felt totally human, aware of the cottages as places where real people dwelled, aware in some complete way of the living chain that had paused there in the person of the mad Vincent van Gogh, paused to record itself. Terraza and Lucilla stopped about 2 paces from Teg and Odrade. There was a smell of garlic on Terraza's breath. "We stopped for a small bite to eat," Terraza said. "Would you like anything?" It was exactly the wrong question. Odrade freed her hand from Teg's arm. She turned quickly and wiped her eyes on her cuff. Looking up once more at Teg, she saw surprise on his face. "Yes," she thought. "Those were real tears." "I think we've done everything here that we can," Terraza said. "It's time you were on your way to Rakkas, Dar." "Past time," Odrade said. Life cannot find reasons to sustain it, cannot be a source of decent mutual regard unless each of us resolves to breathe such qualities into it. Chenoway, Conversations with Leto II. Hedley Tuek, high priest of the divided god, had grown increasingly angry with Styros. Although too old himself ever to hope for the high priest's bench, Styros had sons, grandsons, and numerous nephews. Styros had transferred his personal ambitions to his family. A cynical man, Styros. He represented a powerful faction in the priesthood, the so-called scientific community, whose influence was insidious and pervasive. They veered dangerously close to heresy. Tuek reminded himself that more than one high priest had been lost in the desert. Regrettable accidents. Styros and his faction were capable of creating such an accident. It was afternoon in Keene, and Styros had just departed, obviously frustrated. Styros wanted Tuek to go into the desert and personally observe Shiana's next venture there. Suspicious of the invitation, Tuek declined. A strange argument ensued, full of innuendo and vague references to Shiana's behavior, plus wordy attacks on the Bene Gesserit. Styros, always suspicious of the Sisterhood, had taken an immediate dislike to the new commander of the Bene Gesserit keep on Rakkas. This... what was her name? Oh, yes. Odred. Odd name. But then the sisters often took odd names. That was their privilege. God himself had never spoken out against the basic goodness of the Bene Gesserit. Against individual sisters, yes. But the Sisterhood itself had shared God's holy vision. Tuek did not like the way Styros spoke of Shiana. Cynical. Tuek had finally silenced Styros with pronouncements delivered here in the Sanctus with its high altar and images of the divided god. Prismatic beam relays cast thin wedges of brilliance through drifting incense from burning melange onto the double line of tall pillars that led up to the altar. Tuek knew his words went directly to God from this setting. God works through our latter-day Siona, Tuek had told Styros, noting the confusion on the old counselor's face. Shiana is the living reminder of Siona, that human instrument who translated him into his present divisions.